Over the years, agriculture has learned to raise more animals in less space by containing those animals in ever smaller cages. Some now say we are confining animals in cages that are simply too small. And so today we pause to ask, how small is too small?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 580th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Kona who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Michael.
Producers Carol Stafford.
Hello there.
And Parmley Taff.
Hello.
Folks, agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. No surplus of food, no civilization. Simple as that. The history of agriculture, and thus of civilization, is one of producing more food from less space. This trend is especially evident in animal agriculture, where we have learned to raise more animals in less space by confining animals to ever smaller cages. With cages, we can now raise many thousands of animals in very small spaces. Some have taken to calling these confinement facilities factory farms because of their industrial character. Images of animals confined in cages are quite disturbing to some people who say the cages have become too small. In California, for example, 800,000 people have signed a petition to place the quote, Prevention of Animal or Farm Animal Cruelty Act on the ballot for public approval. The situation presents us with an interesting conflict. On the one side, we have an agriculture that must always find ways to produce more food from less space, and on the other side, we have people who wish to treat animals humanely. And so today we ask, how humanly can we treat farm animals and still produce enough food? And here to help us explore this question today, we have Anita Mingles, who is with the Californians for Sound Farm Animal Agriculture. Anita, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And what is Californians for Sound Farm Animal Agriculture?
We're a coalition which was formed specifically to oppose the ballot initiative that you're speaking with, that you're speaking mm-hmm. about, which, despite its title, would really just come down to one thing: the size of the enclosures in which egg-laying hens could be housed. This initiative is a classic example of what can happen in the way of unintended consequences when you get a very emotional issue on the ballot.
Well, it certainly is.
But before we get into sound public policy.
Yeah, before we get into the specifics, Anita, I always ask, who pays the way? Who pays your way for the Californians for Sound Farm Animal Agriculture?
Well, leading the way, of course, are California's egg farmers and ranchers who will be most directly impacted by the initiative.
Sure. Okay, good. Fair enough. And also with us today, we have Paul Shapiro, who is the director of the Humane Society's Factory Farming Project. Paul, welcome back to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be back with you.
Yeah, I think looking back to when you appeared last, it was issue number 505, so that was 75 weeks ago, I guess. Let me ask you this. What is the Factory Farming Project?
Well, the Humane Society of the United States is the largest animal welfare organization in the country, and we have about 10.5 million supporters across the nation, and we're engaged now, as you mentioned, in a ballot initiative that's essentially an effort to help curb some of the worst abuses of factory farming. And we are working with within a coalition of other animal welfare organizations, veterinarians, food safety experts, environmental organizations, to help ensure that California farm animals have simply the ability to turn around and extend their limbs. That's really all this ballot initiative is about, is giving veal calves egg-laying hens and breeding pigs enough room merely to turn around and extend their limbs. And I'm confident that California voters in November will choose to approve this initiative because it is such a basic request that we treat these animals with some semblance of basic humanity
okay,
when we're raising them
for food. Before we go on, Paul, who pays your way?
The Humane Society of the United States is the largest funder of Californians for Humane Farms.
Okay, good. And who pays Humane Society's way?
We have 10.5 million supporters across the country. These are donors to our organization who help fund our efforts to help reduce animal suffering, whether it be busting dogfighting rings, whether it be working with local law enforcement to bust cockfighting rings or providing free spay-neuter services, or helping improve the lives of farm animals. Our donors want to ensure that the Humane Society of the United States is able to go out and make the world a better place for animals.
So essentially, people.
Yes, that's
people
exactly
who
right.
Are people who like animals. I guess we all like animals when it gets right down to it. Well, let's take a quick look at the California initiative, which may be coming to a state, your state, wherever you are in this great country of ours. Something like this could be coming to your state as well. So let's take a peek at the California initiative and see what it says. Let's start with you, Paul, because it's your organization, I guess, that's passing around the petitions, correct?
Yes, and we've turned in the petitions, as you mentioned, approximately 800,000 Californians signed petitions to put this measure on the ballot.
And why did you see a need for something like this?
Well, it's clear that the complete lack of legal protection that so many farm animals have from even the most egregious cruelty has just gone beyond the pale. Many of these standard agribusiness operations are just so far out of step with mainstream California.
In what respect?
These are out of step with mainstream Californian values about how animals ought to be treated. And to use the example that is specific to this ballot initiative, there are millions of animals in California right now who are confined in cages that are so small they're unable even to engage in the most basic movement. The egg-laying hens to whom Anita refers are unable even to spread their wings for more than a year before they're slaughtered. It really
That's
is
nonsense.
Hard to imagine something that is more cruel and inhumane. In fact, the egg industry recommends that each one of these laying hens receive only 67 square inches of cage space per bird. That's smaller than a sheet of letter-sized paper on which to live for more than a year. So the type of cruelty that they're defending is, again, confining a 4-pound animal to a space smaller than a sheet of letter-sized paper for more than a year before she's slaughtered. This was never a California tradition to
intensively confine these
farm animals in tiny cages their whole lives.
It sounds like an apartment living in New York City, doesn't it?
Well, the main difference, perhaps, is that you can leave your apartment whenever you like, and unfortunately these birds have a life sentence.
So you saw that this is an inhumane way of treating an animal, and so you came up with a petition that says what?
Well, there's no doubt that it's an inhumane way to treat animals, and the science is very clear on this, but you don't need to be a scientist to know that confining animals in spaces that are so small that they can barely move for their whole lives is inhumane. But what the petition says is very, very basic. What it says is that veal calves, breeding pigs, and egg-laying hens should have enough room to turn around and extend their limbs. And it gives California producers a very lengthy transition time until the year 2015 in order to come into compliance with the very modest requirements
okay,
of
so
the initiative.
All you're saying is then, if I understand you correctly, is that animals must be provided with enough space to spread their wings, as it were, and turn around.
Turn around and extend their limbs. That's exactly right.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go to Anita, Californians for Sound Farm Animal Agriculture. Does the request of this initiative not sound reasonable to you?
It is a classic example of a misleading title with not scientifically based information pushing people's emotional hot buttons for a policy which is not needed and could very well have extensive unintended consequences for not only the egg farmers and ranchers who provide safe food products for California's family, but for consumers who will probably wind up paying more for them, and also for the health of the hens themselves. Let's take a look at the initiative again. Paul keeps mentioning the veal crates and the sow gestation crates. But the Humane Society itself has said in writing, quote, there are no producers using veal crates in California. And the pork industry is relatively small. To the extent that these industries will be largely unaffected by the passage of this act, they go on to say they're focusing on the hens. So the first question one should ask is, you've got a title of initiative that sounds very sweeping. You've got elements of the initiative, two out of three, in fact, that don't relate to any animal agriculture in California. And then they get down to the laying hens. Now, the American Veterinary Medical Association has said that confinement rearing, i.e., cages, provide many opportunities to enhance the health and welfare of food animals by protecting them from adverse environmental
conditions.
Anita,
can we hold off on the hens, the laying
sure.
hens? We're going to have to take a quick break. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about caged for life. We're talking about animals that we raise in cages, and we're talking about whether we should or should not increase the size of those cages. We're curious to hear, of course, what you have to think about this issue. 800-624-2665 and 831-479 are the phone numbers. Do you believe that we should somehow come to grips with providing more space for animals, and who will pay the costs and all of those things? Give us a ring. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about animal agriculture, and specifically, how much room should animals be allowed in their cages as we confine them in facilities. At one time, we raised our animals out in the kind of the open. I can remember my grandfather's farm, and I can remember, we're talking about pigs, of course, and the pigs had a utopia in their big pig pen. They had all the mud they needed to keep them happy, and they ate kitchen scraps and grains and whatnot, and they always seemed to be pretty happy. And then, of course, the chickens pecked their way around the farmyard and out in the fields, and they enjoyed eating the bugs and eating the grains and whatever they could find. But as we confine ourselves to city, we find ourselves in the need to grow more and more food on less and less space. And so that utopian animal farm of my grandfather's is long since gone, and now what we have are confinement facilities in which we have learned to confine animals in small spaces. And some people now say that those spaces are simply too small. And some people say that we're doing just fine. And we have two people representing each side. We have Paul Shapiro, the director of the Humane Society's Factory Farming Project. And we have Anita Mingles, representing Californians for Sound Farm Animal Agriculture. And we're talking about whether these cages are too small and what we can do about it. Right now, we're going to go back and talk with Anita, who was making the point that one of the three animals we're talking about, I guess two of them don't count here in California, the pig and the veal, because there's really no industries for either here in California. But let's talk about the chickens, which there is a big industry here, and providing enough space for them. Anita, go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting. I'd like to go back to something Paul said a few minutes ago, and that he said, and I paraphrase, you don't need to be a scientist to make these decisions or to observe what's going on with the birds. And frankly, that's incorrect. If you take a look at the American Veterinary Medical Association's policies on keeping animals in enclosures, one of the things that they say is that the science and professional judgment indicate that we cannot consider housing systems in isolation from other important factors that influence animal welfare. This gets back to the whole question of who should decide very sweeping animal health, animal welfare, public policy.
That's a great question. We have that down the list on number two, so hold that.
Okay.
And take me back to the laying hens and what you're going to say about them.
When you talk about the laying hens, a few things to keep in mind. Number one, the egg farmers of California have voluntarily improved the enclosure systems, as they do as, you know, responsible not only people, but as responsible farmers and business people. I mean, there's absolutely no reason to treat your animals badly if you want to be able to provide, you know, adequate supplies of safe, healthy food for California families. It just doesn't make any sense. If you talk to folks like Dr. Joy Mensch from UC Davis, who happens to consult to both the egg farmers and to the Humane Society, she will say that cage systems have gotten significantly more humane in the last decades, with birds getting more floor space, and goes on to say that experience has been in systems where they've gone entirely cage-free, specifically Europe, which, by the way, has a ban that Paul may be talking about, hasn't been fully implemented yet. But she's observed there that in Europe they've observed that during their roughly two-year laying life, cage-free hens die at more than twice the rate of caged hens. And she goes on with some reasons, also saying they suffer higher rates of broken bones. There are issues of exposure to the elements, exposure to disease, exposure to predators. And on balance, many animal scientists, and I emphasize the word scientists because, again, political activists who are good at pushing emotional hot buttons may not be the best folks you want making public policy.
Well, with all due respect, so this is an emotional initiative, is it not?
Oh, certainly. And that is why the Humane Society believes it can succeed. However, California voters have become accustomed to people promising them things that may or may not be completely truthful or do what they say. In this case, for example, saying you're going to protect three classes of animals when only one applies.
Uh-huh.
So it's very important to take a look at all of the facts and really make up your mind, you know, who should make the decision. There's one other point I'd like to make, and that is that it is true consumers are looking for different options in not only eggs that they eat, but other kinds of food products. And California's farmers and ranchers have been very good at responding to those needs. Many folks who operate conventional systems for housing their hens also have gone to cage-free, mm-hmm. organic, other kinds of options in order to meet the market that their consumers have created. And there's no reason to believe that this won't continue if more and more consumers demand these products. Certainly, the farmers will respond to that demand without an initiative.
There's always a good way of voting, right? And that's with your pocketbook.
A lot of folks do it.
Okay, let's talk with Meredith in San Diego. Meredith, welcome to the food chain. Is it true you have chickens in San Diego County?
We do have chickens here, yes. We have chicken ranchers.
You have chicken ranchers.
Yeah.
Are they kind to their chickens?
Well, there is one man at one of the farmers markets that I spoke with, and he actually has one chicken per cage,
mm-hmm.
and they have enough room in their cage. So it can be done.
And was he selling eggs?
Yes,
right,
he's selling
okay,
eggs.
Good.
He does sell eggs every Sunday. Mm-hmm. We also have large intensive confinement operations with battery caged hens as well.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of caged hens did you say?
They're called battery cages.
What's a battery cage?
As Paul was saying, they have they cram about six chickens into a small cage. And in those cages, they can't turn around or extend their wings or limbs. Mm-hmm. And then they are stacked up like three high, so that mm-hmm. all the feces, you know, go down to the chickens below, and they're on wire floors. And anyway, that's what we're trying to ban in this state now.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like living on an aircraft carrier where you stack three high and when people come back from Liberty, things rain down upon you, you know. It's a very terrible place to live. So I feel for those chickens. Anita Mingles, you know, with respect to that kind of caging system, has that been found to be scientifically viable and safe for chickens?
Yeah, actually, many animal welfare experts say that on balance, it is best for the hens. And I'm forgive me because I couldn't really hear everything Meredith was saying, but she makes some good points. She was talking about farmers that have a variety of systems in which they house their hens, And that's as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, folks need to listen to the needs of the marketplace. They need to be ever aware of scientific advances, which this initiative conveniently ignores, and do what is right, not only for their own hens and their own business, but for the consumers for whom they're providing the food. When you talk about the confinement system, actually, more and more and more, they're being upgraded so that you don't have the issues that you actually have in a cage-free system, where the physical waste of the chickens, you know, is exposed to the chickens themselves. In the good modern confinement systems, those things are taken care of so that the waste is diverted away. They have access to adequate supplies of food and water. They don't need to compete for it the way they would in a barnyard. And as I say, on balance, many animal welfare scientists and experts have determined that that is a better way to go. I'd also like to talk about for a minute the issue of, you know, as Meredith said, there was one chicken in each enclosure. And that might work for that farmer, but consider this. If you have millions of egg-laying hens in California, and you suddenly say that over a period of a few years they need to be converted to essentially a cage-free system, mm-hmm. and I think Paul would agree that what this initiative would do is essentially ban cages altogether.
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask Paul, is that true? Is that what this...
Thank you, Michael. Let me respond to a number of the issues that Anita and Meredith have raised. I think that Anita...
You're going to have to hold it because we're going to have to take a break. But I want to ask you if what Anita says is true, is that are you trying to ban all cages in California?
Well, what this initiative would do is require that laying hens and veal calves and breeding pigs, and there are thousands of breeding pigs in California who are confined in tiny cages right now who are unable
We'll talk about breeding pigs also when we get back. We have to take a break. Hold on, Paul. You're next. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about animals in confinement. We're talking about how we raise animals for our food. We're talking about how to treat them humanely and yet make some money at the same time. How do we provide enough animal agriculture so that we can eat and eat efficiently without having to call on our neighbors and our friends across the sea like China to provide our food for us, right? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Well, the job of agriculture throughout history is to figure out how to grow more food from less space. In doing so, it can provide a surplus of food and fiber with which we, you and I, can use to build civilization. Without that surplus, however, you and I will not get to enjoy civilization. It will be quite the contrary, I suspect. But we have been very fortunate in having an agriculture that has provided that surplus. And so we can live in cities, and we can live the good life, and we can watch TV and go to the ball games and do all of the things that we love to do because we have that surplus of food and fiber. And so the question is, how does agriculture continue to provide this surplus? Well, it does so by figuring out how to grow more food from less space, and you can really see that in animal agriculture, where we once grew animals, raised our animals in open fields and big pens and farmyard. We now grow them in confinement facilities that some have taken to calling factory farms because of their industrial character. But the images that come out of those factory farms are none too pleasing to most of us, probably when it gets right down to it, all of us. And so we say, wait a minute, these cages are simply too small. And so 800,000 people here in California have signed a petition to increase the size of those cages. And that's the question that we're dealing with today is how humanely can we treat our animals and still have an agriculture? And of course, that agriculture is what we live on. So that's the question, and we're looking for answers from Paul Shapiro from the Humane Society's Factory Farm Project and from Anita Mingles with Californians for Sound Farm Animal Agriculture. And you, always curious to hear what you have to say. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Paul Shapiro, going back to you, Anita made the mention that that the objective of what you're trying to do is to really get rid of all caged facilities. Is that correct?
I think that I would agree with Anita in that battery cages for laying hens have been shown time and time again by numerous scientists to be a cruel and an inhumane way to keep these animals. And what this initiative asks for is that the animals, regardless of how they're kept, be able to turn around and extend their limbs. And I think Anita has some good sound bites, but I think, unfortunately, she does tend to ignore sound science. For example, she talked about the fact that, you know, producers would never mistreat their birds because the birds wouldn't produce. But it's ironic that she then went on to mention Dr. Joy Mensch, because Dr. Mensch has routinely written about the very fact that it is now agreed that good productivity are not good indicators of good welfare. The fact of the matter is that we've bred these animals for astronomical rates of egg production, and they'll continue to lay eggs, whether in many different circumstances. In fact, you could break their legs and they would continue to lay eggs. It's also ironic that she mentions the study from the European Union, because the study that she's mentioning is called the Laywell Project, concluded after looking at seven different countries, 230 flocks of birds, really the most comprehensive analysis on the housing systems relating to egg-laying hens. They concluded after this exhaustive review of the data that the only egg production system which cannot provide satisfactory welfare for laying hens is the battery cage production system, the very system that Anita is defending. Finally, I think that it's interesting that she mentions that California producers are now participating in this voluntary program where they're giving the birds a few more inches of cage space. What's interesting about that is that this is the program by a group called the United Egg Producers. And when the California producers and other egg producers across the country began participating in this program, they called it something called Animal Care Certified. This was so misleading because the standards of this program were so paltry. They were basically misleading consumers as to the treatment of these animals. And the California Attorney General, along with 16 other state attorneys general, fined them $100,000 to settle these false advertising allegations related to animal welfare. The egg industry has a bad history and a bad record when it comes to animal cruelty, but it also has a bad history when it comes to misleading consumers. And I think that's what they're doing now with this very modest ballot initiative, is they're misleading consumers into believing that it's about something that it isn't. The science is very clear. Numerous animal scientists and veterinarians are crystal clear that these birds have numerous behaviors that are thwarted when they're confined in these barren battery cages in which they can barely move an inch for their entire lives.
Okay,
the science
let's
is clear,
go.
And it's common sense. You don't want to treat animals like this in this manner. It's just cruel and inhumane, and it ought to stop.
Okay, good. Let's go to Bonnie, who has a comment. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Bonnie, welcome to the food chain.
Oh, hi. It's Ronnie.
Ronnie.
But hi. Yeah, hi. How are you?
Just ducky. Which
good.
Is better than being a chickie.
Yeah, better than being a chicken, maybe. I just wanted to say a couple of things. One is, Anita said that the animals are protected from getting hurt. Well, the chickens in the cages end up with broken wings, broken legs. Sometimes they're pulled out of the cage and their foot remains stuck on the bottom of the cage on the wire and the bird comes out. I don't think that's protecting them. If you take them out after their term in there, they can hardly walk, or they don't walk. They're mm-hmm. totally lame because they've never walked. There are dead chickens that are amongst the live chickens in these cages. There are health issues of all kinds. The animals are sick. They get pneumonia. They
hey,
get
Ronnie,
other diseases.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that we can treat animals humanely and still eat them?
Well, I'm going to say it depends how you mean humane. I think on a farm, possibly you could treat them humanely on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
To answer your question, I would say yes.
I experienced a farm like that other than my grandfather's. Joel Salatin in the Shenandoah River Valley of Virginia has a farm, Polyface Farm, and his animals pretty much run free.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses the chickens to, you know, follow the cattle through the pastures, and the animals all seem to be very happy and are filled with personality and whatnot, and they taste delicious too. So,
well, if an animal has a better life and it has less stress and so on, it's obviously going to taste better. I mean, people are complaining about the taste of
okay, let me ask
chickens
you
right now that they taste horrible.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Do you think we could afford to eat animals if that was the only way we could raise them, as Joel Salatin raises them on that Polyface farm, on this idyllic farm in the Shenandoah River Valley? Do you think what would we do here in California? Could we eat?
I think you can afford to eat them if you want to eat them. I think maybe you're going to eat less of them, which is healthier anyways. But yes, I definitely think you can eat the animals. I think I just read something as far as the eggs, that what they're talking about is a penny an egg increase for the cost of the eggs. So it's 12 cents a dozen in 2015. That doesn't seem like a big inflation rate.
And Michael, let me just
Thank you for the call, Ronnie.
I think I need to respond to that, if I may.
Okay, both of you may respond to that when we get back from this break. Fair enough?
Thank you.
Michael
Thank
Olson, you. This is The Food Chain. We're having a lot of fun talking about animal agriculture and how we should treat our animals and whether we should confine them in cages or let them run free, or as it were, or provide more space for them, and can we afford to do that? And if we do that, will it still make for a healthy agriculture? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-4719-1080. Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, what do you think out there, folks? Should we provide more space for our animals? That's the question today. 800-624-2665, 831-4719-1080. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Agriculture. Okay, we're going to go to both Paul and Anita. Anita, we'll start with you and then go to Paul. Go ahead.
Thank you. Really quickly, to address what Ronnie was talking about, your last caller, mm-hmm. she made some, what she stated as fact, observations, which seemed to be her opinions of conditions inside conventional housing systems for hens. She didn't say whether she was a scientist or a veterinarian or a, you know, perhaps
an egg farmer.
She just
said she was Ronnie.
She just said she was Ronnie, and I would submit that Ronnie may be well-intended, but perhaps is just reading things off of Paul's website, which may or may not be entirely accurate. I would like to get back to something which Paul said, because he was talking about allegedly being misleading, and he said a couple of things that were entirely misleading, and he should know better than that. Frankly, it's disappointing that the Humane Society would resort to misleading folks in the way he has. He said that the egg farmers had been fined by the Attorney General for false advertising, and nothing could be further from the truth. What happened was the egg farmers, in trying to respond to the public's concern about how animals and hens are treated, actually came up with their own label. They didn't use anybody else's definition or label or title for how they raised their eggs, so consumers would have some level of confidence that they were indeed coming from eggs, hens that were being well cared for. And Paul's group went to the Attorney General and others and tried to, you know, get things going to, you know, to prove their allegation that this was misleading. In fact, there were no charges filed, no findings of fact published, no wrongdoing ever hinted at on the part of the Attorney General. This happened in several states, and the egg farmers, you know, volunteered to help defray the cost of those investigations, even though they were not found to be wanting in any way whatsoever. So again, it's disappointing that he feels he has to resort to this kind of misleading statement to cast aspersions on California egg farmers who are trying very hard to improve conditions consistently, to keep up with science, to keep up with sound animal welfare practices, and provide a reliable supply of safe, healthy products for California families.
Paul?
Well, thank you very much, Michael. The first thing is that it is a bit of revisionist history what's going on here. The reality is that the Better Business Bureau ruled that the United Egg Producers was engaged in misleading advertising. The United Egg Producers appealed the ruling. The Better Business Bureau upheld its ruling. The United Egg Producers still did not comply with the Better Business Bureau, and so they were referred to the Federal Trade Commission. Then there were some egg consumers and others who sued the United Egg Producers. That ended up being settled out of court. And it is true that the United Egg Producers was never found guilty in a court of law, but what I said was that in order to settle the allegations, the false advertising, they paid a $100,000 fine to 16 state attorneys general, including the California Attorney General.
And that's entirely
inaccurate. And that said, we're talking about here, you know, it's interesting that Anita would like to discount the opinions of Californians such as Ronnie, you know, if they don't happen to be veterinarians. The reality is that more than 100 California veterinarians have already endorsed the Prevention of Farm Animal Cruelty Act because they know that it is cruel and inhumane to confine these animals in cages where they can barely move for their entire lives. And that's really the bottom line here. I mean, we can, you know, engage in mud throwing all we want about what's happened in the past and about fines and so on. But the reality is, if we think that animals who are raised for food ought to have enough room merely to turn around and extend their limbs, then we should vote, then Californians ought to vote yes in November on the Farm Animal, on the Prevention of Farm Animal Cruelty Act. That's really what this is about.
And okay, let's hear what our callers have to say. Let's go to Roxanne. Roxanne, welcome to the food chain.
Hi, Michael. It occurs to me that the egg farmers would have no reason to respond to consumers if, in fact, something wasn't wrong. We've all known for years that things were wrong with this new form of scientific farming. It's not kind. And people, I've kept chickens, I've kept animals. People know very well they have feelings. They know the difference between...
So that gets me to my core question. You know, you raise these animals and you get close to them. You become like the 4-H child who raises an animal and you get very close to them. And then when it comes time to selling that animal into the marketplace where it's going to get slaughtered, you have these different feelings. And so how humanely can we treat these animals and still raise them for food?
This is the problem I see, is that it's not up to the animal to suffer so that we can keep our distance.
Mm-hmm.
Either eating animals is right or it's not right. I don't know what
okay.
the answer is. I do eat meat.
Mm-hmm.
But and the other thing I was going to say is that we talk about it being profitable for them to institute standards.
Mm-hmm.
I know that for myself, our family... I live on a fixed income. I'm elderly. We have gone to eating all organic vegetables, organic meat, cage-free everything.
So you're voting with your pocketbook.
Well, what I was going to say is we eat a lot less.
Huh.
I mean, we can't afford to eat the way that we used to.
Right.
But we did make the judgment that eating well was better than eating more.
Okay.
So I'm just saying that when you talk about, well, what, will it be profitable, what will happen to the industries? I think people are already going away from the industries. I think this is all just talk.
Well, thank you for calling up and saying that here on the food chain.
Can I say one thing?
Really quickly.
I just can't help it, but I think Mingles is the perfect name for somebody representing that.
That's not a fair thing to say. We'll drop you on that one. And we're going to take a quick break, folks. This is the food chain. Michael Olson here. We do have Anita Mingles with us, Californians for Sound Farm Animal Agriculture, and Paul Shapiro, Director, Humane Society's Factory Farming Project, right back. Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about caged animals. We're going to get some directions from Anita and Paul so that we can contact them after the show. Anita, how do we get in touch with Californians for Sound Farm Animal Agriculture?
Well, our website is currently under construction, so stand by and look for that. Certainly, if you plug in on the internet, you can find other resources. We do have a phone number that folks can call.
And
that
is
310-996-2670. And again, please stand by for our website, which is currently under construction.
Okay, good. And Paul, how do we get in touch with you?
Thank you, Michael. For any Californians who are concerned about preventing cruelty to millions of animals in the state, they can visit us online at humanecalifornia.org. Again, that's humanecalifornia.org.
Good enough. Let's go to Christine. Christine, you work on an egg farm. Welcome to the food chain. Are you there, hon? Christine. Maybe I better press your button. There. I think I have you now.
You hear me now?
Yes, gotcha.
Good morning. First of all, I just really would like to applaud both members of the egg industry and of the animal movement. I really see this initiative as a really common sense proposal for Californians. I work in the egg industry, and I sell eggs directly to the public through a farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
And chickens that I raise are raised in cages.
Mm-hmm.
And on a daily basis when I do sell eggs.
Let me ask you this. Is there a way of doing it without cages?
Absolutely. There's so many different ways of being both a profitable producer and not intensely confining chickens.
Mm-hmm.
Cage-free.
But you raise yours in cages.
True. I don't run the company, but
uh-huh.
I currently work for it.
So you work for a company that raises chickens in cages, and you think that they should be out running and without cages?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Fair enough. Good. Do you think that the chickens that you're raising are being raised inhumanely?
I definitely think there's a better way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to throw black paint on these egg producers. They're human beings too.
Okay, should this be taken care of through an initiative, or should people vote with their pocketbook? How do you think people should vote on this issue?
I think it should be both with your pocketbook and through the will of the people. I think we are so lucky to have the ballot initiative process in California. And since consumer demand really is pointing towards, you know, cage-free production, free-range production of eggs, I think that it's the perfect time to put that to vote in California. It's such a hot topic right now, and I think Californians will respond positively. And believe it or not, I really think this is an opportunity for the egg industry to work together with...
Oops, there it is. I'm sorry I dropped her, and I'm kind of out of time, regretfully, because this is such an incredible subject. And look forward to more sometime in the future so where we can work these things through. I personally like the idea of voting on this issue with my pocketbook, and that's how I do vote with just about everything when it comes to food. I vote with my pocketbook because it's the quickest and most direct way of getting my message through to those who produce food. And this is how I would like to see my food produced, and this is how I would like to do it, and this is what I'm willing to pay for. And boy, they hear that message really quickly. I want to thank my guest today, Anita Mangles, who are from the Californians for Sound Farm Agriculture, and I want to thank Paul Shapiro, who is the director of the Humane Society's Factory Farming Project. And above all, I want to thank you folks for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you so much for being here.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.